From the Sky News Centre at 6. There's still some way to go before the recession's over. The latest figures showed more negative growth, making it the longest recession since records began. The Tories say it's now clear the government's economic strategy has failed as other major economies returned to growth 6 months ago. Bronwyn Curtis from HSBC tells us why the results came as a big disappointment to the city.
They're quite out of line with what we've been seeing in the data leading up to the release of those figures. We've seen slightly better data, we've seen slightly better lending, we've seen better confidence and house prices picking up a bit. So that's why it was such a shock.
Nick Griffin plans to complain about his treatment on TV's Question Time last night. The BNP leader says he was subjected to a lynch mob and BBC bias. The Royal Mail claims the nationwide postal strike has left 30 million letters undelivered. The company's branded the walkouts by the Communication Workers Union as unnecessary and irresponsible. Evie Marshall celebrates her 11th birthday this weekend and is worried she won't get any cards.
I'm going to feel really upset because they can't get here, and I would feel really forgotten, but I'll also feel quite disappointed that none of my cars can get here.
A former champion dog breeder who abandoned nearly 100 St. Bernards to go on holiday has been jailed for 4.5 months for animal cruelty. Mary Collis left the dogs at kennels in Northamptonshire. Two pilots who caused a hijack alert after missing their destination say they were distracted by a cockpit row. Their Northwest Airlines flight overshot Minneapolis-St. Paul's International Airport by 150 miles. Some believe the pilots must have fallen asleep. And Liverpool are taking steps to make sure there's not a repeat of the beach ball goal when they face Manchester United in the Premier League on Sunday. Any inflatable items brought by fans will be confiscated by Anfield staff. That's the latest. I'm Kelly.
This is Bristol Community 93.2 FM.
Did you know that you can get a self-test for chlamydia? The test is free and confidential. It's as easy as peeing in a pot. If you are 15 to 24 years old, make sure you get a test every year or whenever you change sexual partner. Contact your GP, sexual health clinic, or call the Chlamydia Screening Office on 0845 180 0050.
Great stuff indeed. Welcome back, folks. Tony has stepped out of the studio for a moment and the inmates are running the asylum. I'm Billy Quain and I'm here with a roundup of what you can do for free and what you can do for not very much money in the next week or so in the greater Bristol area. You heard there the sounds of Mancala, local Caribbean band with a track called Keeping the Spirit High. I play that with specific reference to the fact that next Sunday, not this week, but next week, the 1st of November, there is the Africa Oyaya Festival up at St. George's on Brandon Hill, which is tying in with the Africa Eye Film Festival down at the Watershed. The Africa Eye Film Festival runs from Friday to Sunday. Africa Oyaya is an all-day event on Sunday at St. George's. There are 10 bands, including Mancala and Haleli, who I will play later in the show. And they £4.99 you're paying for that. However, I'm here first of all, first and foremost, to talk about things you can do for free in the city. And on Saturday, you can go and see for free from 3 p.m. onwards down at the Millennium Square on the dockside. You can see Babyhead, Kid Carpet, Django Spears, Bizzali and Poppy Perez. And also the winner of the Climate 350 Battle of the Bands. There's inspiring speakers from Oxfam, The Converging World, Stop Climate Chaos Coalition and a selection of community wonders. Basically, I'm going to give you a little bit of info on this because this really does sound fascinating and hopefully the weather will hold so that we'll all have a great day outside tomorrow. October the 24th is the Global Action Day to raise awareness about the Copenhagen talks on climate change taking place in December 2009. And this is Bristol's response. All over the world, there will be thousands of events like this one, people getting together to celebrate what they love about the world and to find out what they can do to make change possible. We want to send a message to the decision makers that we are together in our hope for a better future and that we expect them to respect our desire for a healthy and just planet. Come and join us on the 24th of October from 2:30 p.m. on the Harbourside and 3 till 9 p.m. at the Millennium Square to enjoy amazing acts and make your voice heard. If you would like more information on this project, which I genuinely believe in, go to www.climatecountdown.org.uk. Climate Countdown there is all one word. So it's www.climatecountdown.org.uk. And this is tying in with At Bristol, I Buy Eco, Mr. Wolf's, Arnold Feeney, Coexist, Grain Barge, Christian Aid and Oxfam. So that's Saturday afternoon tomorrow. OK, also this weekend, I think you do have to pay for it, is the Ox Jam. I've lost my flyer now, but it is there somewhere. It will come to hand any moment now. The Ox Jam is running across the city in 6 or 8 different venues. As I said, it's £10 for a ticket for this one. This is not a free event. However, the venues that it gets you into are The Croft, The Cooler, The Junction, Mr. Wolf's, Halo, Start the Bus and The Golden Lion. And this is on Sunday. You've got music from the likes of Yes Rebels, Kid Carpet, New Roads, Farthing Wood, The Hit Ups, Baka 45, Ring Around Saturn and several, well, dozens of others, frankly, including a nice one called Duck My Sick. If you want more info on that one, go to oxjambristol.com or oxjam.org.uk or we go to wegottickets.com. And that is running on Sunday, 2 p.m. till late. You do have to pay for that one. Now, I went to the Pierian Centre the other day and I had a lovely time because I saw Mamani Barka, who is the last remaining master of the Biram, playing said instrument with Omar, who was his percussionist for the evening. It was a wonderful evening. It really is an enchanting sound that he creates with it. And I would urge anybody to go to the Pierian Centre because it is a fantastic resource and anything at all that's on there is worth going to see. Speaking of which, Mabir Physics and the Songs of Iron is on Monday evening at 8 p.m. It's a science cafe with Namburu Zienge and Fidelis Mrembi. Pronunciation, I'm afraid, isn't really my bag on this, but it's... Do you know what? I'll read the blurb to you. The unique collision of African traditional music and cutting-edge physics sheds light in all directions. Physicist Namburu Zienge is joined by Mabira master Fidelis Mrembi for an evening of learning and pleasure, an evening that unites the worlds of music and science, of tradition and research. This is going to be fascinating. it's also free. It's part of the Learning Revolution Festival. Since the days of ancient Greece, music and science have been seen as twins. Nahumbiru Zinge revives the ancient tradition with an evening that first introduces the subtleties of the Zimbabwean thumb piano, the mbira, and then uses them to explore some of the fundamental laws of physics. It's honestly, there is method to the madness of this, I promise you. There's a dazzling performance by the mbira master Fidelis Meherembi. And if you want more information on that, please go to info@periancentre.com. You need to be down there at 7:30 for an 8 p.m. start, or alternatively, you can phone them up because booking is essential for this gig. It's 0117-924-4512. I'll repeat that for you. It is 0117-924-4512. Now, speaking of talks and learning things, on the, where have we got? We have got the 28th of October, so counting forwards, I think that's Wednesday evening next week. Andrew Charlesworth at 6 p.m. is speaking in the Folk House on 40A Park Street about facing up to the dark side of social networking. Here goes the blurb. Have you ever considered that personal information posted online can be accessed not only by friends and family, but also by employers and authorities beyond your control? Come along for the discussion and find out more. It's actually fairly prescient at the moment because of the, who was it? Someone of the insurance companies lost a disc with 50,000 people's, a tape, I beg your pardon, which was being transported to South Africa. 50,000 names and vital statistics thereon. Now then, finally, for this segment, because we're going to take a little bit more music, on Tuesday the 28th and Wednesday the 29th, up at the Bristol City Museum at the top of Park Street, bottom of Queen's Road, wherever you choose to call it, you can go hands-on with portraiture. Look closely at yourself and others through a range of family activities inspired by portrait drawings in the exhibition and in our art galleries. This is part of their drawing season, which they've brought in. It's the end of the line attitudes in drawing season, and it runs till the 1st of November. However, Tuesday and Wednesday are the evenings I would recommend you go up and see them. Now then, I spoke earlier about Hilleli. Prior to that, I had just had a quick word outside the studio with Polly Proctor, and she tells me tomorrow evening in St. Werburgh's Community Centre, there is a fundraiser for Alphonse, who is the lead singer of Hilleli, who's suffering immigration problems at the moment. It's well worth going along to see. They are playing at St. George's next Sunday. So here we go. This is a track of theirs called MMUA.
Don't run, bow,
Well then, folks, there we go. That is the unmistakable sound of Haleli with Emenwe. That's great stuff. I'm afraid I did have to cut that one off slightly because I have so much more to tell you and Tony is eager to get back into his studio. How shameful of me to wrest control of the place from him in such a... Anyway, we'll move on from there. This week, Tuesday, this is all up at the Victoria Rooms, principally, and they are all free. On Tuesday, 27th, it's the Music Research Seminar. It's Fit for a King, Music and Iconography in the Beauchamp Chapel in Warwick. The speaker is Alexandra Buckle of the University of Oxford, and that is between 4.30 and 5.30pm. On Wednesday, there is a lunchtime concert at 1.15pm. It's Unexplored Britain. James Gere, who is a tenor, and Ronald Woodley, who is on the piano, and that's exploring some of Benjamin Britten's lesser-known works. I think it's his early song adaptations of W.H. Auden poems. On Friday, there is also a lunchtime concert. This time, it is by the members of the Leeds University Centre for Historically Informed Performance, and it's a quartet of players performing music by Eberl and Mendelssohn. It's at the Victoria Rooms at 1.15pm similarly. Also, moving on from there, on the 26th of October at the Wills Memorial Building, we have Lord Ronald Oxborough, member of the House of Lords, and he is speaking on energy, people and climate. This lecture tackles one of the biggest challenges facing us all, how to produce enough energy for an expanding world population without doing more damage to the planet. I think that's prescient at the moment. And also, 29th of October, the Right Honourable Lord William Waldegrave of North Hill, who's politician and provost of Eton College, is restoring trust in politics, which is, I think, very, very appropriate to this programme. He's approaching an election year and a challenging and timely look at what needs to be done to restore our trust in politics, particularly in light of expenses scandals and such like. Now then, I'm just quickly going to whiz around what's been going on theatre and opera-wise in the city this weekend. Because there is still a couple of days left. If you go to the Hen and Chicken tonight, you will wet your pants with laughter at the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre Company. I went last night and I think I've still got a stitch from it. That is not many pounds, but it's still not free, so I shouldn't really be mentioning it. At the Alma Tavern, Showing the Monster, continuing the Theatre West season up there. I have seen it. It's fabulous. At the Old Vic, I got an email this afternoon. £10 will get you 29 hours of improvised soap opera, which is continuing all weekend down at the Old Vic. I would go along, actually I did go along and see the Bristol Feral Choir the other night. It was a pay what you can event and it was fantastic fun. Don't forget the Folk House this weekend, the Harmonica Festival is running all weekend. You will have to pay for that. In the Henley's Trinity United Reformed Church, Waterford Road, you can go and see Gustav Holst's The Perfect Fool. I haven't got any audio of that for you because it's never been recorded. There is a Caelion as part of the Oxjam season down at the South Bank Club and Dean Lane in Bedminster. Vic Reeves and Alan Davis are doing talks in St. George's this weekend. On Sunday evening, the Vida Guitar Quartet are playing at St. George's. That is 24th, yes, £18 for that one you have to pay, I'm afraid. And also, Africa Oyaya. I have had a word with Gary Prestwich, who is the marketing manager of St. George's. I have a full and detailed conversation with him, which you can listen to about 10:30 tomorrow morning. Finally, Saturday evening, Bristol Old Vic Main House. It's the Portico Quartet and Sweet Billy Pilgrim. This is a double bill featuring two of the bands nominated for this year's Mercury Music Prize. You do have to pay for that one. I'm going to leave you with one final thought. On Thursday evening, you can go and see Basekoyu Kuyati and Ngoni Ba at St. George's. This is what they sound like. Tony is back after this. Have a nice weekend.
Kodu madieba makeboke urupumba kilizongwe
Nanamu nanamu fantane manafama kumafo Kodu machinyeba makeboke urupumba kilizongwe
Well, come on, Billy. What was that, Billy? Just tell us.
It's the unpronounceable Basisui Kiyuete and Ngoni Ba with a lovely track there called Segu Tonjon.
It was fantastic, and there's absolutely no way I could have pronounced that. So thanks for doing that, Billy. Maureen is joining us in the studio now. Maureen, you've been having a look at happiness, which is a great thing to have a look at. And as part of our second hours now here on Friday Drive Time, you're looking quite a lot of weeks, I think, in the future as well, at a healthy lifestyle. And obviously, happiness is quite an important part of that.
Yes, today I will talk about happiness. Why? Everyone, politicians, scientists and ordinary people are talking about happiness. It's a buzzword like Obama's change. President Sarkozy is proposing to offer a new assessment for the France's well-being to include a happiness measure. David Cameron says there is no more to life than making money, arguing that improving people's happiness is a key challenge for politicians. New research commissioned by the Community Service Volunteers Make a Difference Day campaign reveals the current state of the nation's happiness, with up to 88% of adults feeling less happy than when the recession started. The findings, which ask more than 2,000 people across Britain which activities are the most likely to make them feel happier. A happy attitude is a weapon creating a positive mood. People are happier when they help a neighbor or friend with a problem. Also, they are happier when the street and parks around them are clean. Many feel happier when they have undertaken some form of physical activity, seen a reduction in crime level locally, or then they simply sit back to enjoy a cup of tea or coffee. This poll indicates that happiness is a state of mind unrelated to wealth and status. The UK is an aging nation. In less than 25 years, one in four people in the UK will be over 65, and the number of over 85 will be doubled. It's expected there will be 30,000 people aged over 100 by the year 2030. Do people get happier as they get older? Studies conducted in the US suggest that people get happier as they age. Scientists from Stanford University found the older people were far less likely than the younger to experience persistent negative moods. They were also much better at controlling and balancing their emotions, a skill that appeared to improve the older they became. Despite worries about ill health, income, change in social status and bereavements, later life tends to be a gold age, according to psychologists. They found older adults generally make the best of the time they have left and have learned to avoid situations that make them feel sad or stressed. The study suggests that young people should start preparing for their old age now by, amongst other things, adopting a healthy daily routine.
And I think also maybe by dancing.
We still know master plan. to the jam. I know where the PD's at, cause I know what time it is. Three on the dime, make mine a 99. You style meanwhile, moves on a mission while fishing in the rivers of life. Fishing in the rivers of life. Fishing in the rivers of life. Fishing in the rivers. Fishing in the rivers. Fishing in the rivers of life.
Good old KLF there with Justified and Ancient. So a Hollywood film producer who we had on earlier on discussing women's rights and the idea of women's rights being a part of a way of taxing a half of the population which wasn't taxed beforehand. Aaron Russo, that interview we heard a clip from earlier on, was recorded a few months before Aaron died by, and it was he was interviewed there by radio talk show host in the US, Alex Jones. Aaron recounted what was allegedly conversations he'd had with Nick Rockefeller, who's a lawyer from the oil and banking dynasty, the Rockefeller dynasty. One of the things that comes out in that 2006 interview is that, according to Russo, some of the richest banking families have big political ambitions. Now, Martin, I think that at least, you know, whether or not what he's saying there is true, that there are some big political ambitions amongst the big bankers. They're not just simply there to manage money, are they?
Well, look at Goldman Sachs, who now seem to be dominating US economic policy, even though they've bankrupted the economy. It's all topsy-turvy.
So how do they actually dominate policy? Are they actually feeding...
Well, it's not that difficult to understand. I mean, President Obama needed money to get elected, and the Wall Street elite provided it for him. But, of course, they do expect their pound of flesh once he's become the president.
How do you think the actual strings work with this? Because it seems a bit peculiar. We've got the situation at the moment where the government is borrowing money from the banks to lend to the banks. What on earth is going on?
Well, yeah, they're buying toxic assets. They're buying shares. They're providing financial resources to the banks. This is taxpayer resources that are being provided to the banks. What the banks are then doing in the US is taking this taxpayer resources and creating lobbying organisations, which then lobby the government with its own money to spend more money on similar programmes. And it's a closed loop. And what ordinary people want is simply not in the equation.
And do you think Gordon Brown's attempts to at least get a stake for the government to part nationalise some of these banks, in fact, some of them are more than 50% nationalised now, do you think that's enough to sort of tip the balance away from the power of the banks?
No, I mean, Brown did the right thing by nationalising, that's to say by buying the bank's assets rather than just giving them money. I mean, Henry Paulson wanted in the US, when Bush was still the president, just to give them money with no strings. Brown, to his credit, decided, no, we can't do that. We'll have to take a stake in the banks. And by doing that, he then forced the US to follow suit, which was actually probably the most powerful thing he's done as British Prime Minister, forcing the hand of the American economic policy. On the other hand, though, I have to say that although they've taken big stakes in the banks and are actually propping the banking system up, they are not taking control. And that is a real problem, because the banks are still doing exactly what they want and nobody's telling them what to do. And that's just wrong.
Well, we will have an extended clip. It's about 8 minutes from this interview with between Alex Jones and Aaron Russo in a minute. But I quite enjoyed that KLF. Let's have a little bit more of that first.
Okay, everybody, lie down on the floor and keep calm.
This is what KLF is about. Also known as the Justified Ancients of Moon. Forevermore
to justify agents' approval. Forevermore known as a jail.
There's those naughty KLF boys there who very famously burnt £1 million. I wonder if there was something maybe more sensible they could have done with that. Anyway, it's time now to go back to this interview from 2006 in between Alex Jones, a US radio talk show host, and Aaron Russo. One of the things that comes out of that interview is that some of the richest banking families have big political ambitions, which they push through small pressure groups and think tanks funded by tax-free foundations. He also talks about what he believes is the connection between the war on terror and the banking families. Russo starts this interview, recorded in the United States, by talking about what he believes is the future of money.
All money is to be in those chips, right? There'll be no more cash. And this is getting me straight from Rockefeller himself. This is what they want to accomplish. And all money will be in your chips. And so instead of having cash, anytime you have money in your chip, they can take out whatever they want to take out whenever they want to. If they say you owe us this much money in taxes, they just deduct it out of your chip digitally.
Total control.
And if you're like me or you, and you're protesting what they're doing, they can just turn off your chip. And you have nothing. You can't buy food. You can't do anything. It's total control of the people.
And that chip's connected to a database that has your purchasing records, what you do, what
everything.
You sell.
Everything is in there, you know? And so they want a one-world government controlled by them, everybody being chipped, all your money in those chips, and they control the chips, and they control people. And you become a slave. You become a serf to these people. That's their goal. That's their intentions.
Eric, can you be specific about when you met Rockefeller, how it happened in these discussions?
I met Rockefeller through a female attorney I knew who called me up one day and said, one of the Rockefellers would like to meet you. I had made a video called Mad as Hell, and he'd seen the video and wanted to meet me and knew I was running for governor of Nevada. So sure, I'd love to meet him. And I met him and I liked him, and he was a very, very smart man. And we used to talk and share ideas and thoughts. And he's the one who told me 11 months before 9/11 ever happened that there was going to be an event. Never told me what the event was going to be. But there was going to be an event. And out of that event, we were going to invade Afghanistan to run pipelines from the Caspian Sea. We were going to invade Iraq, you know, to take over the oil fields, establish a base in the Middle East, and make it all part of the New World Order. And we go after Chavez in Venezuela. And sure enough, later 9/11 happened. And I remember he was telling me how how you're going to see soldiers looking in caves for people in Afghanistan and Pakistan and all these places. And there's going to be this war on terror, which is no real enemy. And the whole thing is a giant hoax, you know, but it's a way for the government to take over the American people.
He told you it was going to be a hoax.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question. He says, there's going to be war on terror. And he's just laughing. There's no... Who are we fighting? I mean, why do you think 9/11 happened and then nothing's happened since then? Do you think that our security is so great here that these people who pulled off 9/11 who were able to can't knock down another plane? Come on, it's ridiculous. 9/11 was done by people in our own government and our own banking system to perpetuate the fear of the American people into subordinating themselves to anything the government wants them to do. That's what it's about, and to create this war, this endless war on terror. And that's why and that was the first lie. And the next lie was going into Iraq, you know, to get Saddam Hussein out with his weapons of mass destruction. That was the next lie.
Now, specifically, this was a little over 6 years ago.
This was
11 months before 9/11.
Yeah.
And Nick Rockefeller, he's a lawyer. He's become your friend over the previous years. And he's saying to you that there's going to be this big event, and then out of that we're going to have a war on terror, and it's just going to go on and on.
Right. An endless war on terror without any real enemy. That you can never, so you can never define a winner.
And did he say that it's going to be perfect because you can't define an enemy, it just goes on and on?
Yeah, he says because you can't define a winner. There's no one who's on to beat, so it goes on and on forever. And they can do whatever they want. They scare the hell out of the American public. Look, this whole war on terror is a fraud. It's a farce. It's very difficult to say it out loud because people are intimidated against saying it. Because if you say it, they want to make you into a nutcase. The truth has to come out. That's why I'm doing this interview. The fact of the matter happens to be that the whole war on terror is a fraud. It's a farce. Then there's a war going on in Iraq because we invaded Iraq. And people over there fighting, you know. But the war on terror, it's a joke, you know. And until we discover what really happened on 9/11 and who was responsible for 9/11, because that's where the war on terror emanates from. That's where it comes from. It was 9/11 that allowed this war on terror to begin. And until we get to the bottom root of 9/11, the truth of 9/11, we'll never know about the war on terror.
Aaron, you said that he was, and I think it's important, and I know this about the Rockefellers, from Dr. Dennis Cuddy and many others, who literally, you'll be 20 years old in a lunch line at college, and it was David Rockefeller. And he hears you're, I mean, they're experts at recruiting and getting what they call players, and that clearly he was, I mean, I want to make it specific and just get you to reiterate what you said last night about you got 30% of the vote, you were having an effect, you made mad as hell, they knew that you'd started the Constitution Party, yeah. They knew that you were somebody who was taking action and getting things done, you'd already made some big films, had a lot of other successes,
right.
So they were trying to recruit you, and didn't it come down to the point of, hey, we are here to recruit you, and don't worry, your chip's going to say, don't mess with us, you know, this guy's, don't touch.
Yeah, yes, that did happen. Now, I was definitely being recruited. But it's more subtle than that.
Well, in your words, just go through the process, and then what do you say?
Well, what it is remember, we were friends, and used to go to my house a lot. We'd have dinner, we'd talk, and he'd tell me about business investments, how you get involved in, you know, or they would help me with this business investment or that business investment. And was I interested in joining the Council on Foreign Relations? You know, I would have to get a letter to join them, but was I interested in that? And, you know, just stuff, you know, leading you on. And I used to say to him that I never really did that because that wasn't where I was coming from. You know, as much as I like you, Nick, you know, your ways and my ways, we're on the opposite side of the fence. You know, I don't believe in enslaving people, you know, and...
And he would come back with, oh, I do? Or?
Well, it'd be more like, you know...
It's better for them.
Well, it's more like, you know, how do I put it? It was like, what do you care about them? What do you care about those people? What difference does it make to you? Take care of your own life. Do the best you can for you and your family. What do the rest of the people mean to you? They don't mean anything to you. They're just serfs. They're just people. You know, it was just a lack of caring, you know, and that's just not who I was. It was just sort of like cold, you know. I used to say to him, what's the point of all this? You have all the money in the world you need. You have all the power you need. What's the point? You know, what's the end goal? And he said the end goal is to get everybody chipped, to control the whole society, to have the bankers, the elite people, you know, the bankers and some governor, controlling the world. And I said, do all the people in the Council on Foreign Relations believe this way you do? He said, no. You know, most of them believe they're doing the right thing. A lot of them believe it's better off being socialistic. You know, we have to convince people that socialism is really capitalism. Because America's becoming a socialist country. It's a communist country today.
Well, that's pretty outlandish stuff, Martin, back from 2006. Would you say there's anything there that really does have credibility, though? Because some of it does sound like it's just a little bit too over the top, and it's difficult to know. Obviously, now Aaron Russo's passed away. We can't cross-examine him about it. Is there anything that does make sense to you amongst all that stuff?
Well, I think the idea that the war on terror is a confected creature designed to control the population is a pretty obvious point to make, really.
Yeah, he says it's a fraud and a farce.
Yes, well, he's not the only one to say so. I mean, obviously, we've got no idea what the credibility of this interview is, or whether the meetings with this Rockefeller fellow actually took place. But I tell you what, people can check quite straightforwardly if they go on the internet. They can look up General Leonid Ivashov, who was the commander of the Russian armed forces, Russian chief of staff, on September the 11th. And he's plenty of English language material up there by him, saying that as far as he's concerned, 9/11 was carried out by the US with Israeli support. And that's the former head of the Russian armed forces. He's retired now, but I would suggest that, unlike your friend Russo or whatever, this chap is in a position to know. The Russians will have had their human intelligence and signals intelligence. They will be in a position, as the head of the Russian armed forces, will be in a position to say what actually happened. Well, and that's what he's saying.
Well, Aaron Russo wasn't just a Hollywood film producer. He was also, as we heard there, running for, and doing quite well in the running for governor of Nevada. He'd obviously decided that he wanted to go from Hollywood and take on the political system a bit. He was one of the people involved. I'm not sure if he was actually the producer of quite an amazing film called Network. I don't know if you've ever seen that, have you?
No.
Network is all about a TV company and all the various pressures that there are on there to get ratings. And it's a fantastic, dramatic view inside a massive national TV network. So I think he certainly has some credibility, Aaron Russo. Whether or not what he's saying is true about microchips is completely another question. But he seems to have a pretty good handle, I think, on some of the more interesting interpretations of the war on terror. Let's move on to have a look at some of the other stories we didn't cover earlier on, some of the lighter stuff. We're told, I think, one of the good bits of news from previous weeks is we were talking about 2 months ago, beginning of July, about the banning of a book by Andy Heyman. Andy Heyman was the Metropolitan Police's anti-terror chief during the 7/7 attacks, and his book, The Terrorist Hunters, was banned by Baroness Scotland in the beginning of July. Now, there were copies put into Sainsbury's and several people were writing on the internet, hey, I've got a copy because I bought mine the day before it was officially published and I've got it from Sainsbury's. But that's now been allowed to be published in its original form. So it's nice to see that that book's finally come out with no changes to the disputed text. Are you someone who will be going out and chasing that book now, Martin? It's now available?
This is the lighter stuff, huh?
At least it's something positive. When we were talking about this in July, it was a bit of a depressing story. Now the book is now out there again.
Well, I don't suppose I will actually read the whole book. I'm quite sure that others will do that for me and point me in the direction of the important extracts that I need to understand. On the internet, one can't read everything.
The book apparently talks about the Cobra meeting on July the 7th, 2005, being quite farcical because there was so much secrecy surrounding the meeting that some of the key people who were supposed to be there, MPs and police, were running around Whitehall in corridors and bumping into each other saying, do you know where this meeting is, this secret meeting? And some of them were very late for the Cobra meeting. And I think this is the kind of thing that is nice to get a glimpse behind the scenes to see what really goes on in these situations. It's interesting also, of course, that Baroness Scotland, who had the book banned, who's the Attorney General, has also in the interim had a bit of a problem herself with a cleaner who was apparently an illegal immigrant who shouldn't have been working in Britain. So maybe that had something to do with her changing her mind about the book being published.
Well, I think you're putting two and two together and making five or six there.
I think what's interesting to me
looking at this story is that more than 100 changes have been made to this book by MI5. So when somebody reads this book and thinks, we're getting a definitive account of what happened here, you've got to remember that 100 changes have been requested by the security services and have been made to the text that you are reading. So what you're actually reading is a tip of the iceberg book with over 100 changes having been made to it by the state.
Okay, so maybe that one is going to be available in the next few days in the shops. I thought I'd take the liberty this week of looking at a story from the Stroud News and Journal from Monday this week, which is, it's kind of over in Gloucestershire, really. But apparently disgruntled residents in Stroud have nailed protest posters to telegraph poles across Chalford after dozens of community notices were were removed in the village. One design is a mock-up of the famous Lord Kitchener Army recruitment poster from the First World War, with the phrase, "Who took our posters? You?" written below. Another shows an angry-looking cat with the words, "Lost all of Chalford's posters." And apparently this is the local authority that's been taking these posters down. Now, do you think that's the job of the local authority, to go down and take posters down off telegraph poles?
Well, don't forget that there has to be some kind of control over where posters go. There's a big issue in Bristol of illegal fly posting on every spare wall or litter bin or whatever. Of course, we want to have people putting posters up to advertise events and so on, but there's got to be some sensible balance there. I'm sure people in Chalfont wouldn't really like it if lots and lots of rave sound systems plastered huge posters all over their shops and all over the village. They'd get upset. Now, in that case, somebody's got to regulate it, and there's got to be a regulation.
Finally, in the Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph, yesterday, a UFO alert. A police officer sees aliens at a crop circle. Now, this really is a story in the Daily Telegraph. Police officer contacted British UFO experts after seeing three aliens examining a freshly made crop circle near Avebury, Wiltshire. Now, Martin, this is the Daily Telegraph. Surely this is something we should take seriously.
Yes, it's a bit like the MP's expenses scandal, isn't it? Well, I don't really have much of a comment on this, having not seen any aliens myself. Apparently, it says the figures were all over 6 foot and had blonde hair. So blonde-haired aliens. I thought they sounded a bit more like Vikings to me, but who knows?
Just like the expenses scandal, the Telegraph is keeping certain of the moles and sources secret on this story.
Yes, well, no doubt they are. What can one say? It's a story, isn't it?
OK. All right, Martin, well, you did very well there. That's all for this week. Anyway, coming up next is the Sky News at 7. Do please join us at 5 on Friday Drive Time each week here on BCFM 93.2, where we review the week's news and discuss some of the big stories in Bristol, Britain and around the world. If you want the story discussed, have questions about this evening's programme, or would like to suggest a topic or guest for a future show, please email me at tony@bcfm.org.uk. Thanks very much to this week's guest, Chris Brown, editor of Bristol247.com, and our resident Old Labour pundit and Oxford economics expert, Martin Summers. The Castle Park Report and Healthy Lifestyle this today was Happiness Report, was courtesy of Marina Morris. Next week, we have leader of the Conservative group on Bristol City Council, Richard Eddy, in the studio to tell us where he's coming from and to help us interpret the week's news. If you're on the internet, you can hear previous week's shows and find out what's scheduled for forthcoming weeks by going to bcfm.org.uk and clicking on presenters' shows on the right to find the Friday Drive Time page. I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable weekend.
And it's here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.